Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. Today, we welcome back Stacy Waleko. She is a tireless Bitcoin developer and somebody that has contributed to both the code and the overall Bitcoin educational experience. Stacy, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Of course. So, Stacy, you brought for us a tremendous slide deck today. We're excited to talk to you about all of these things. I want to first show people these really cool little books that you've made. Tell people the idea behind these zines.
Sure. So this is a passion project of mine. I call them zines. They're short for magazine, which I think a lot of people don't really know that. But yeah, call them whatever you want to. I've named them Satsy's Pocket Guide because I go by Satsy on a lot of different platforms. But it started off as wanting to learn about something and then kind of wanting to share what I've learned. So they're little booklets and they're just about Bitcoin tech. I might expand to other things in the future, but for now it's Bitcoin. And they're all open source, so you can go ahead and read them online. So here's one about BIPs, and you just, there it is. But you can also print them at home. And they are super short and sweet. It's actually only a single piece of paper that you print, and then you cut, and then you fold. And so the awesome thing about these is that they're really accessible to anyone who has a printer. I love the idea of kind of like a closed domain way of learning something, because if I'm reading about something online and I encounter a word I don't mean, I will often like go look it up, and then suddenly that reminds me of something else. And I always end up on Twitter by the end of it and completely like forgetting what I was doing in the first place. So I love these because if you can read a single page front to back, you're done, and you can kind of like, you know, a little bit more about something. And I really try to do topics that I don't know a lot about so that I can learn about and sometimes talk to subject matter experts and just share the knowledge.
The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with a collaborative multi-sig vault where you hold two of three keys and you gain a Bitcoin security partner. Purchase Bitcoin directly into your Unchained account via their trading desk, avoiding all exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best retirement products in the industry. Easily roll over your IRA or 401k while keeping control of your keys. And Unchained is running a special right now until August 15th. This is a limited time offer, $1,745 off of a Bitcoin IRA, free for the first year, and no onboarding fees and no setup fees. Use the promo code AUGUSTIRA when you create an account. Imagine losing your Bitcoin to a house fire or accidental damage. A nightmare, right? It's estimated that 30% of Bitcoin is lost forever. Poor seed phrase security is a big reason why. That's why we use Stampseed, a DIY kit that allows you to hammer your seed phrase into a durable plate of titanium using professional stamping tools. These plates are made of fire-resistant titanium of up to 3,000 degrees. They are rust-proof, crush-proof, and time-proof. It comes in one solid piece, so it's compact and easy to hide, and the full C words are hammered deep into these small titanium plates. Stampseed is specially designed with patented tools from knowledge of working inside metal stamping for over 14 years. Don't risk your Bitcoin security. Get Stampseed today at stampseed.com, and don't forget to use the promo code TBL for 15% off of your order. So it's zines, or zines if you're like me and completely botching it. Zines, short for magazines. And I love these because I'm also like you. I like to read paper books because if you're reading online or on a screen, it's very easy to go look up something and then fall down a rabbit hole. Rabbit holes are great, but also education is important, and trying to focus on, you know, a like you said, a closed end piece of material. So you have this great one on Taproot, which is a really important BIP and something that brings a ton of programmability to Bitcoin, something that I know you're passionate about. Before we get into some of the specifics of Taproot, talk to us about Bitcoin education in general. What is your motive to try to explain some of these, you know, esoteric concepts? I'll just give people an example. When I am teaching my class at USC on Bitcoin and I'm getting into the basics of what hashing is, so just a straight hashing algorithm turning an input of random characters into a uniform string of characters as the output, the very basic concept of a hash is something most people don't understand, yet it's at the basis of what Bitcoin is. So where does your motivation for education come from, and what are you trying to get out there?
Yeah, so I kind of try to look back to and remember what it was like when I was first learning about Bitcoin. My background is in software, so I was coming in it from that angle, but it was still pretty intimidating. And I think I would often get caught on, like, a term that's used a lot is protocol, that I don't think I ever learned what that meant until Bitcoin, because I kept seeing it over and over again. And you can only see a word so many times before you kind of realize, I think I need to learn what that means. And I also, a visual learning style resonates a lot with me. So diagrams are really helpful. Now, being on the other side, diagrams are sometimes kind of tricky to do. But, you know, we make it work. And then trying to explain something in a way that's very succinct, which is incredibly hard for some stuff in Bitcoin, because you want to be simple, but you also, like, it's really important to me to be technically accurate. And actually, the biggest, I wouldn't call it a pain point, but a struggle with these zines and material like this is making it fit on a single piece of paper, because my audience is really people who are, who have enough technical interest to understand it, but don't necessarily want to become a developer in that field. So I recently did one on PayJoin. It's not released yet, but hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, it will be. And then prior to that, I did one on Stratum. And for both of those, I got to talk to the actual developers and it was amazing, but they just had so much amazing information. And I had to figure out like what to cut and what to keep. And that was really hard, because as a developer myself, I sympathize with them. Like, you are talking about something so incredibly cool and I wish I could include it, but I don't, unfortunately don't think that the majority of readers who have no idea what this topic is are ready. And I think, like, actually, when we talk about self-custody in Bitcoin, just in general, it is kind of like it's like a step-by-step process. First, you just learn what self-custody is, and maybe you have like a hot wallet on a custodial service, and then you kind of like upgrade yourself over time. So I kind of feel that way about all kinds of learning, but especially Bitcoin technology.
Great. So, and of course, I'm on slide 3 here, the open source nature of your pocket guides just allows people to print off one page, short and sweet, print it right at home, cut it out. So I'm really excited for people to get online, quickly plug where they can find these for people so that they can just go right now and start printing while they're listening to the rest of this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's satsie.dev/zines. So SATSIE.DEV. And the link is also on the bottom right-hand corner of the slides.
Excellent. So let's talk about PayJoin. What is PayJoin?
So PayJoin is a way to batch transactions right now between two people, but in the future, it could also be between more. And one of the cool things about it is that it breaks one of the common heuristics that chain analysis firms use to kind of track users. So usually the assumption, and actually this is in the white paper, there is an assumption that all of the inputs in a transaction belong to the sender of the transaction. And there's usually two outputs. One goes to the recipient and the other one is a change address or a bit of change. And with PayJoin, the receiver also contributes an input. So that breaks the assumption that both inputs belong to the sender. But then you can also do a lot of really cool stuff like that. Like you can do something called transact. Well, I guess anytime you use a transaction for more than what its original intent was, it's called transaction cut through. So you could also use that same transaction to open a lightning channel with the person that you're transacting with. You can use it to like pay somebody else in one of the outputs. So it actually, it's a really powerful tool in terms of batching, and more batching means more higher transaction throughput, which means more efficient use of block space, which means lower fees for everybody. So PageRank's awesome. It what's also cool about it is you don't have to necessarily use it to benefit. I don't know what the threshold is, but after a certain level of adoption, everyone just benefits because one, we all get lower fees, but two, by breaking that comment, I think it's called the comment input heuristic. It's listed in one of the BIPs. Suddenly, like, no blockchain analysis firm can make these assumptions that all inputs belong to the sender.
That's really interesting. And when we think about saving block space, it's part of why we got Lightning Network in the first place. Our goal with Lightning Network was to make sure that we have an ability to transact in Bitcoin without clogging up that block space. And so talk to us real quickly, just a little bit of a segue and a sidebar. Lightning Network, give us an update there. How are you seeing development, usage, metrics, just from your perspective? How's the growth on Lightning from your perspective?
I wish I could give you like a really solid technical answer. I don't spend too much of my time in Lightning, but I do want to point out that we're actually seeing a lot of use for it on Noster because Noster has all those zaps. And so I just think it's amazing that like initially when Lightning first came out, you could buy like a couple of novel things. If you were at a conference, you could maybe buy some coffee. You could play some games on the internet. But now having Noster and having those zaps adds a really interesting social component to it where I think it also, it changes the landscape of what incentivizes you to post and where, which I think is really cool. As far as the tech goes, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to misspeak, but we are seeing some, you know, I'm not even going to mention, I'm sorry. Bolt 12, I think. Come back to me on it. I promise next time you ask me, I will have the actual technical explanation for it.
And, you know, when we think about Lightning Network, of course, the technicals are very difficult to understand because it's an entirely separate protocol from Bitcoin. You know, those that have spent their time understanding how blockchain works, it really goes out the window with Lightning because Lightning doesn't use a blockchain. It uses smart contracts, makes it very difficult. But we're always curious about usage because that in the end is what matters to us. So your point on Lightning being used for zaps on Noster, which if people aren't aware, Noster is a social media protocol that allows people with the same concept of a private public key pair to participate in social media via owning everything yourself via that private key. And as part of that Noster network, we now have Lightning Network capability built in where you can send Lightning transactions to and from other people via Noster. So we actually receive those zaps when we, you know, communicate on Noster as well. So it's exciting. We know that the adoption is, it's just in the beginning stages, but are you on Noster? Are you posting there and are you, you know, participating in that network?
Yeah, I am. I'd say I probably split my time 50-50 between Twitter and Noster. I do notice that the community in Noster is a lot more engaged and responsive. So I typically post higher quality content there, but I will say, be a little bit careful because you can't delete anything on Noster. Not really. Like you basically broadcast information and then other relays pick it up. And so unlike Twitter, you own like all that data, but like it's not centralized anywhere, so it can't be deleted. So be nice to everyone on Noster. Yeah.
Don't treat it like your personal battle rap station.
Yeah.
And because you won't be able to delete anything
Right, right. Don't make it a sock puppet account.
Absolutely. So let's transition to a very exciting project, Saving Satoshi. This is something that we played around with it, literally. So tell us about this project, please.
Yeah, I would love to. So the one line sentence is, saving Satoshi is a fun and gentle way to learn how Bitcoin works. It is a game. It's an in-browser computer game. It's based against an epic sci-fi story that's very Bitcoin themed. It has a lot of Bitcoin culture in it. And we designed it to make it like a welcoming entry point to Bitcoin technology. And we truly believe that it's reflective of the best parts about Bitcoin. Like, it's a little bit of a rabbit hole. It's totally open source. It's a labor of love, all that good stuff. So that's what it is. And in the deck, I have a couple of screenshots of kind of the exercises that you do. We really cover a lot, but we try to gently guide you through certain things. So right now, the game starts with learning how to decode the hidden message in the Genesis block. So that takes you to a block explorer, which some people may not have ever used before. It forces you to open up the details of a transaction. You have to look at some of the hex values in there and take that information and put it into the Saving Satoshi game. And then it'll tell you like if you got it right or wrong. And then we even have a little function that we show you how to decode the hex on the command line to find the actual Chancellor on the Brink of Bailout headline. And then after that, we get into some mining. Then we get into some elliptic curve cryptography, transaction building from scratch. We go through script, we go through Lightning. And it just, it takes the player through some topics that traditionally, if you were to use the resources, might be a little bit difficult for some people, especially if you don't have a great attention span or you find talks and books like really difficult to digest. We try to do it in a way that's different. So
this is an absolutely fascinating, because now that you're talking about it, I can just envision making students go through this whole process and helping to enhance their learning. So I have a few questions about this project for the audience. So who's involved in the project? When did you guys start it? Is it done? How much work left? How long do you plan on working on this?
Yeah, those are all great questions. So it started roughly 2 years ago, just before the Bitcoin design community's design-a-thon. And the kind of like founding team at the moment is myself, Jonas from Chaincode Labs, and Christoph from the Bitcoin design community. And then we've also along the way collected some more amazing contributors. Matthew Zipkin's been doing a lot of work on the lesson content. We have this developer, Ben, who has just been with us for so long, leading the charge to get all of this actually implemented, and some more awesome contributors that you can find in our Discord channel. I already forgot what your other questions are. So the initial goal was to do 10 chapters, which it's taken 2 years to do 10 chapters because it's a lot of work and a lot happens. And I was on maternity leave for one of those years. We're finally nearing the 10th chapter, which is great because it's like the end of our storyline. Oh, which by the way, we've had two amazing writers on the storyline. Ken from Spiral, who's the 10 cats that control the Spiral Twitter. And then John Tinklenberg from one of my former colleagues at Casa. They've contributed such amazing characters to this. And we hope that by the end of it, people will be inspired to write their own chapters or their own lessons, their own stories. I would love to run some kind of hackathon for that. I think that would be really cool. But I think we're just trying to reach the 10th chapter so we can collect, we can say like we have like a game that you can like play from start to finish.
It's very exciting. And I would, first of all, encourage everyone to go check out the Discord channel, contribute to the project, because this is something that, you know, we're definitely going to contribute to this project at the Bitcoin layer. I'm going to write it down so that it doesn't, it doesn't slip through the cracks. And what I want people to understand is that getting Bitcoin into the zeitgeist is something that I know it drives you, it drives us, and it's such a long process. And you guys have spent 2 years just building out a game. Think about how many years people will play this for and how many people will contribute to it in a very open source ethos sort of way that underpins Bitcoin itself. So my question to you would be, you know, what's your vision for the usage of this game long term? Who do you want to play it? And how do you want it to affect the world of Bitcoin aside from, you know, maybe getting an incredible documentary on Netflix for the first time that actually goes through Bitcoin properly, or my second book, things that we, you know, everyone is trying to teach and trying to move it forward. So what's your vision for this game specifically?
Yeah, for this game specifically, we want to inspire a new generation to fall in love with Bitcoin. And I, you know, it, it comes to being educators and the students that they work with. We've brainstormed about this a lot. And one of the funny things that comes up is that this idea that young people think Bitcoin's a boomer coin and Ethereum's the cool one. So that's one of the things that we want to change. We think Bitcoin's awesome and cool. And we also think that Bitcoin deserves the same amazing user experience that all the other things that have software do. We want to be able to have like world-class design and like dazzling visuals and great storytelling. And there's no reason why Bitcoin can't have that. And we also want to complement the stuff that already exists out there. We're not trying to compete with it, because at the end of the day, yes, we want Bitcoin to like grow and be amazing and big and everyone to use it. But something that I don't know if people talk about or want to think about is Bitcoin's not inevitable. And in many ways, Bitcoin is under attack constantly. Whether that is a bad actor claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto and griefing the whole community for 10 years, or politicians trying to choke out Bitcoin industries, forks and alternative coins trying to deceptively convince newcomers that they have the same value proposition as Bitcoin, the media lying, saying that the effects of Bitcoin mining are not what they are. There's just constantly a battle to be fought, and we really need all the good people we can get. And kind of a comforting thought to me is like some of the potentially best contributors to Bitcoin may not even know about it yet, which so it's cool. We're in a really cool phase. Like Bitcoin's not mainstream yet, but we have so much potential. There's so much good stuff out there. So I really hope that this game can contribute in that way to moving the ball forward. And it really is like our unique contribution using the skills that we have, to Bitcoin. It's a gift. It's a labor of love. It's an expression of how much we love the community. And so if it can, you know, create one more Bitcoin developer, then I feel like we've succeeded.
You're inspiring a little bit of a rant, so I'm going to try to keep it short. But the what Stacey is saying is so important about the attacks on Bitcoin, because there's two types of attacks on Bitcoin. There's a malicious attack, and there's an innocuous attack. And so let's focus on the people that, from my perspective, are innocuous. These are people that are technologists that are interested in building something cool. They see Bitcoin, they see altcoin projects, they think, okay, one is 60,000, the other is $4. There's probably more opportunity for me over there. Okay, there's cool stuff I can experiment with. And they're just pursuing a course of technology that fits their eye. That's not someone who's maliciously trying to attack Bitcoin. But in a way, the people that go that direction might be heading down a waste of time. And we can save that waste of time by teaching them about Bitcoin. Then there's the malicious attacks from the energy, the mining perspective, from governments, from the public perception. All of those angles have to be addressed as well with education. And so when we think about attacks on Bitcoin, we have to take them very seriously, treat the malicious ones with savagery, and treat the innocuous ones with respect, kindness, education, and you know, an olive branch, and understanding that we have both of those is important, and addressing both of them, sometimes with the same tool, but maybe a different tactic, are important. So just wanted to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, I love the way that you phrased that. And I think the for the innocuous ones, like, it's a waste of their time, but it's also a waste of their potential when they could be applying whatever unique skills that they have towards something like Bitcoin. Instead, and also in, you know, maybe you really believe in a certain cryptocurrency, but the people running it may not be doing a very good job delivering value to you or to the rest of the industry. That's like, just by virtue of supporting them, you're contributing to some of that, like Craig Wright and his coins and the damage that he's been trying to inflict on the Bitcoin community. So I really like the way that you phrased that.
Well, you know, let's be happy that one trial is in the past, and maybe we can, you know, go on to the next battle. But all of these resources are important. So now I'm thinking selfishly for my students. They're not computer science students. They're business students. They're finance students. So I want them to understand the technology without forcing them to do too much, you know, command line. Mm-hmm. But also anything that is remotely associated with Bitcoin history, they need to know, you know, mm-hmm. every, you know, the letter of the law from that perspective. So from my students' perspective, or the non-technical side, let's say maybe an older generation that wants to learn too, but doesn't want to have to code as they go, what is the game experience going to be like for those people?
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, thank you for mentioning this group of people, because I'm really passionate about teaching this group, basically people who are technically like interested in technical stuff, but have no intention of ever becoming a developer. Like, they can maybe read some code, especially like simple kind of stuff like loops, but they're not interested in doing it. And I think that is a underserved group, which excites me, because that's an opportunity to serve these people. As far as saving Satoshi goes, we are in the middle of building out some difficulty levels. So if anyone's tried it, it starts to get a little hard at chapter 4. And that's coming from someone who wrote chapter 4. But we're passionate about making it something that, like you said, like a business students or older people who don't code want to be able to use. So what I really love about the first half of the game is there's a little bit of command line stuff in chapter 1. We have, it's like a REPL inside of, and you'll see it in some of the screenshots, inside of the browser. And we have hints, and we have little like help buttons and places that you can go to ask for more help, because that's also some of the stuff that we want to teach is we want the game to also teach you how to look for your own answers. So we want to point to reputable places where you can get more information on Bitcoin technology and just let you go and let you find the information that you need. But chapters 2 and 3 cover mining, which I think, like you said, about just teaching what a hash is really important. And then chapter 3 covers pooled mining, which is really cool because especially with something like Stratum V2 right around the corner, it's kind of important to learn about how some of that stuff works, especially if you do want to work in like the mining industry, like from a business standpoint. And then chapter 4, actually, we try to teach some elliptic curve cryptography, which is just, if you're not in Bitcoin, I feel like it's a notoriously difficult thing to learn. In fact, before I joined the Bitcoin, I guess before I got into Bitcoin, I would have been too scared to touch ECC. But because I now work in Bitcoin, I'm not afraid of it anymore. I have the confidence to kind of like learn about it because I see so many other people talking about it and other people trying to teach it in a way that is understandable. So we cover some of that. We the curve is drawn, and we kind of say a little bit about the multiplication operations on it. And then a little bit later in the game, we also do some work with interacting with your Bitcoin node. So I know that is command line stuff, but it's really cool to actually see the exact payload that a node will give back to you when you ask for something. On one of the slides, I think it's the third to last one, I have an example of basically, it's the slide that starts with real learning that helps you understand better. You take a transaction blob, which is, I think, just a bunch of hex data, and you throw it into the function, and it will color all the data and tell you exactly what each chunk means, which is really cool, especially when something's like, it's just a number to indicate the size of the data that comes after it. I think that's really cool to see. We do some message verification and signing. So in the storyline, the villain basically claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto, and he claims that he has Satoshi's keys. So he gives you a message that's been signed by Satoshi's keys, and you have to figure out if it is true or not. So I think there's a lot of areas that somebody who isn't a coder, a lot of opportunities for them to enjoy the game. But we are also, I think I started saying this before I didn't finish the thought, we are building out difficulty levels so that you can specifically say, make it easy for me. I'm not trying to like really learn stuff here. I just want to like have fun. And then we have like higher levels for people who are like, I want to be a Bitcoin developer and I don't know where to start. So I'm going to go.
All right. So my class begins in January. And so we're going to work together and get our business student version ready by that time. And that's something that it will become. I can already tell it's going to become passion project because I need to teach a tool. I'm on my own when I'm teaching this Bitcoin class. I had to come up with the curriculum myself. It's a brand new class. It's my proposal. So I came up with the curriculum. When I pitched the course to the university, I basically said, I'll teach layered money. But then when I went to do the syllabus, I realized layered money doesn't have most of the things that you need to learn what Bitcoin is. It's mostly a book about money.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. And I have to teach that as well. I teach balance sheet hierarchy, but I teach hashes. I teach the difficulty target. And I specifically teach the target being a number that is very small. And that individual technical specification about Bitcoin, where you have an opportunity set of data, which is 2 to the 256th power, and the target is a number that's so small that it's nearly impossible to get a hash output that's less than that number. Now, I'm not a programmer, so I had to learn that myself in 2016, learning about Bitcoin. But then I had to figure out a way to teach it to business school students in 2022 that wasn't coding based or, you know, computer science based at all. And so it feels great to be on the, you know, on the cusp of having teaching tools for the world and not, you know, not just for 25 students in a USC classroom, but for the entire planet. So we're really excited to continue to track this project, contribute it, give you our ideas, but mostly just sit back and, you know, benefit from and admire the work that you guys are doing.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to collaborating. I know the team will be so happy to hear this.
Yes. And so let's talk really quickly before we close about Stratum V2. You mentioned it. You mentioned mining pools. I want to make sure that we touch on that before we close today. So explain to the viewers, what is that?
Yeah, I feel like I need to use my zine as a guide. Just because Stratum covers a whole lot of stuff. So just like the one sentence explanation is it's just a messaging protocol that miners and pools use to talk to each other. But I think you have to, one, recognize that, well, I mean, it seems like people are solo mining now a little bit, but generally speaking, most people join a pool when they mine so that they can get rewarded proportionally to the amount of work that they contribute. With solo mining, you are basically hashing and hashing and hashing, And one day you hope that it'll all pay off and you get that block, which we have seen happen. But
shout out to those solo miners yeah, out there winning a couple blocks over the last few months. That is incredibly impressive.
That's so inspiring. But I'm a little risk averse. So personally, and I have bought a miner and plugged in my house, but I live in the Northeast, so electricity is wildly expensive. It was not profitable, but it was worth the experience. And I used a mining pool. But I kind of do just want to walk through this. It was a proposal in late 2011, and Stratum was actually made for Electrum, like the wallet software that people use. But it turned out that it was actually a really nice fit for the needs of pooled mining. So it just kind of became that. And a funny story is when I was working at Casa, I used Electrum a lot. And the API was a little confusing to me, but it turned out that it was like the same thing that Stratum used. So that kind of makes sense why some of the functions were probably more suited to somebody who needed pooled mining. But the most exciting thing about Stratum is the decentralization that it brings. So right with Stratum V1, the pool chooses what transactions go into a block. So you better hope that you just like what the pool is doing. We have seen some situations, particularly with ocean mining, where they choose not to include certain transactions because of what those transactions are doing. But I think generally for miners, the name of the game is profitability. So you also, by choosing your own transactions, you also get to make sure that you are choosing the most profitable ones. But also the biggest thing is censorship. Like when you choose the transactions that go into your block that you are mining, you can be certain that nothing's being censored, that nobody made the block template for you. So that feature is called job declaration. It's basically you are the transactions going into the block is the job, and you were making a declaration that that's what you're doing. And then Stratum V1 also had some issues like standardization. So it was never truly standardized, which means that implementations were not guaranteed to work together, which defeats the whole purpose of a protocol. A protocol is like a common language that everyone's supposed to speak when implementing a certain feature. There was like a little bit of hiccups in terms of that with Stratum V1. It's also security in Stratum V2 that V1 didn't have, which is V1 didn't have authentication and encryption. So that means when your miner sitting in your basement sends the work that it just, all those hashes it just did, to the pool to prove, hey, pool, I've been hashing, what could happen was a man-in-the-middle attack where somebody could be watching your traffic, intercepting that packet, changing the from name and saying, oh, it's actually from this miner, it's from me instead, and then passing it on to the pool, and the pool would reward the attacker in the middle instead of you. So for pools that manage their own miners, I feel like some people are kind of saying, oh, that's like not really a big concern. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's also like, I feel like the like authentication and encryption is, if you can get it this easily, why would you not want to have it? Why would you choose to not have it? And then there's a bunch of like performance improvements with Stratum V2. The messages are smaller and they use binary instead of JSON RPC, which is human readable, but a lot heavier. There's less messages going back and forth. There's been some improvements to the way that connections are pulled together. And so Stratum is, I think, really exciting. There is a couple shortcomings. One is it doesn't address making sure that pools pay miners and that they pay miners the rightful amount. I think there's another project working on that right now, but I don't want to name it in case I'm not right about that. But today Stratum is usable. There are pools using it. There is also still more work to be done. There's a lot of like testing, monitoring, that kind of stuff that needs to happen. So if anyone is looking for a project to contribute, I know that community would love to have more eyes on it, but overall, it's a very ambitious project, but they're moving it along. I think one of the biggest hurdles, though, is going to be getting adoption, because a lot of the miners out there are shipped with pre-installed firmware that uses Stratum V1. So at some point, I do feel like the name of the game is going to be how do we lower the amount of friction for people to just plug their miners in and have it running with the OEM firmware running Stratum V2. But I'm not sure if anyone's currently working on that right now.
Mining protocols are, you know, just as important as every other individual component of Bitcoin. All of these things work together to create the ecosystem that we have, and allowing miners to have control over what they are doing. For example, job declaration is a new term for us, but the concept is not new, which is that it's your right to choose the transactions to put in that block. You're the miner, and you should be able to choose them. All of these things are so important. And to the viewer, we understand that sometimes we get bogged down in global macroeconomics and price action. But in the end, this is a protocol, as Stacy was saying. And this protocol has features that need to be maintained by software developers at all times. And so we love our episodes that shift away from markets and go back to the protocol, go back to mining. And Stacy Waleko, thank you so much for joining us today and explaining to us some of these topics. I want to get from you where people can find you and all your great work. First, I want to thank our sponsors, Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Definitely check them out. And their retirement products, you can get a new IRA, get your Bitcoin into that IRA without ever having to relinquish control of your keys. Very important concept that we want people to get familiar with. Stampseed is a new DIY kit that allows you to hammer your seed phrase into these fireproof titanium plates. Definitely something that you guys should check out. And Ifani, America's most secure mobile service to protect yourself against SIM swaps and identity theft. So Stacy, tell us where people can find your work.
Yeah. And anywhere on the internet, I usually go by Satsie, SATSIE. My website is https://satsie.dev. I think that's about
it. And definitely go check out Saving Satoshi.
Oh, yes.
play the game and give the people, the team your feedback on how to make this game better, because the nature of the open source project is very exciting. So savingsatoshi.com. For that. Stacy, once again, thank you for joining the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks.